1210 on WGN. John for John. And you just heard me in a commercial talking about Corinne and John Heggie. And we got Corinne on live right now. Hey, Corinne, Happy New Year.
John, Happy New Year. Great to be with you.
Family all good? Everyone happy? Good holiday season?
We had a great holiday season, and we're all watching our Illini in the bowl game.
Yeah, I wish I could be right now, but I'm doing this. I will be soon, though. Hopefully it's a good outcome there. Corinne, you know, I wanted to bring you on because obviously people make New Year's resolutions, and we've got to find a way, and you do such a great job. You write so many creative pieces that get published in places that just try and get people on board with the idea of estate planning. Would this be a good resolution for everyone to add to the list for 2023 to get some plan in place?
Getting an estate plan in place would be a great resolution for anyone who's over 18 for 2023.
Do you feel like it's just not, I don't want to say top of mind. I think a lot of people know they should, but for whatever reason they don't. Has anyone been able to crack the code on why people are reluctant to make an estate plan?
That's a great question, John, and one we think about a lot at our office. I don't know that there's a code to crack, but I know that our approach is to try to lower the barrier to entry. So what do I mean by that? You know, you can go on our website, find out about the documents, and you can start with a questionnaire. And it's really not as hard as people think. And I'm going to tell you why. It's not as hard as people think because there's three questions you need to be able to answer to start thinking about an estate plan that works for you. Those three questions are, what do you own? How do you own it? And who do you want to have the benefit of that property when you yourself can no longer enjoy it?
And those are three simple questions, but the answers can be maybe more eye-opening than we realize. Because when we say estate planning, when I hear the word estate, I think of some grand lord or lady in England. We own a lot more than we realize, don't we, Corinne?
You absolutely do. I suspect most people have a checking account. Maybe you have a savings account. You might have a car. You might have a condo. So that's property. You might have a pair of earrings or a watch or a collection that you've either purchased yourself or in the collection space cultivated over your lifetime. That's property too. And you can, in an estate plan, get a course of action for what happens to that property when you can no longer enjoy it yourself.
For question number two, how do I own that? What do you mean by that?
So when I say, how do you own your property? Do you own it in your own name? Do you own it? And this is for all the 18-year-olds and young adults out there. Do you perhaps own it with your parents? Because you might have opened up a savings account or might have opened up a brokerage account, or you might have owned your car with your parents before you flew from the nest, before you graduated from college, before you graduated from grad school. Married people need to think about this. Do you own your home jointly with your spouse? Are you the only one on the deed for real estate? That's the kind of questions. And, you know, I'm going to say, John, that a lot of people will say, well, how do I find that out?
Right. That's what I was going to say. I think the answer to number two is a good one to think through, because I bet a lot of us have no idea.
Exactly. So it's not really as hard as one might think. So with real estate, let's talk about that first, if we can. Yeah. Take a look at your deed. You got a copy of your deed, a recorded deed, after you closed down the property, a couple weeks after, probably from the lawyer who assisted you in closing that transaction. Take a look at your deed for real estate. If you can't find it in your papers, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to the lawyer, his or her office that helped you. Or you can get the PIN number off of your tax bill and go take a look at it on online at the county recorder's website.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's real estate.
Yeah, that's real estate. What else?
So if you have a bank account, right, a savings account, a bank account, a brokerage account, take a look at, if you manage it online, go log in and see how you own the property. It'll tell you when you go into an account statement, If it's coming to Corinne Heggie at my address, I own that by myself.
Uh-huh.
If it's coming to me and John Heggie, we own it jointly.
And the difference between those two makes a difference when the time comes, doesn't it?
Exactly, because the way you own things while you're living impacts what happens to that property when you're no longer able to enjoy it. You're no longer living.
Okay. Corinne Heggie on the line from Heggie Wachner Law Firm, talking about estate planning and what that means. And we are talking, Corinne, about asking people first, what do they own? That's complicated, maybe more than people think. How do I own it is a little bit of a tougher question to answer. And Corinne, we're already getting some questions on the line. You okay if I field a few questions?
That sounds great, John.
All right. So someone wants to know, is it okay for a handwritten letter with all of the three items she mentioned, which I believe was like a savings account, a car, and a condo, and have that written statement notarized? Is that all that required for the state for a living will? Like if someone does that, are they good?
That's a great start, but that won't be a valid last will and testament in Illinois.
Really?
Right. Got to write it down, but you need two witnesses.
Okay. So if you get two witnesses, you're in better shape, but that's maybe just a first step to estate planning, Corinne. Like we get a lot of people that say, oh, I've written it down somewhere. That's good, right? That's better than nothing, as long as you've done it the legal way. But you should at least examine whether there's other options out there for you. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Are there a lot of tripping points that people don't realize could happen with something like that when it comes time?
There are. You've got to just watch out for little because there are legal technicalities that might impact whether your will be recognized when you're no longer living.
Mm-hmm. And there's also aspects of it where, you know, a trust versus a will, and I don't want to get too ahead of our skis here because we'll help define these in a moment. There's certain protections that perhaps a trust would have over a will.
Exactly. I mean, yes, they're different documents. They can work together, but they're different documents with different requirements for them to be recognized as legal.
Let's walk through what happens. If you pass away and you have a will, what's the process? What happens to someone? And I know a lot of people have probably gone through this maybe when their folks passed away, but for those that haven't, what is that? What happens next? What happens first and next?
Well, the first thing that happens is friends, family, business partners, whomever, have to identify your original will, like get your hands on the original will. And the person who's named in your will, who's going to be your point guard, to borrow from basketball, to run point on your assets and where they go according to your will, is your executor.
Okay.
So people are going to be looking for the executor or executors, because in Illinois, you can have more than one executor in your will. So the executor's job then is to take the original will, have the death certificate, have his or her or their license or state IDs to prove they are who they say they are, and start speaking to banks.
Okay. And does this
life
person,
insurance companies.
Yeah, does this person have to do all the legwork? Is there help along the way? Is there any like official government body that aids in this process, or is it really up to the executor to do the digging?
That's a great question. So the executor is, runs point, and the executor can get help along the way. You know, we do a lot of work, John, at our office, helping executors do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to banks and when you go to life insurance companies, they have a lot of estate departments or estate settlement departments. So there's people working in these institutions, financial institutions most of the time, who can help you. But what people fail to realize is that they work for the institution, so they often can't answer a lot of your questions. They're really, really good and helpful by and large in our experience. But they'll get you the paperwork, but you're going to have to read that paperwork and provide the information that you would find, again, in the will,
when does,
on the death certificate.
When does probate get involved? Like, how does the court just all of a sudden reach out to you saying, hey, before we distribute this will, there's going to be a hearing? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so the probate process is typically started if an executor is in a discussion, John, like the one I just described.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Executor Corinne. I have the death certificate. I have a certified copy of the will. Send me the forms to claim, right? Claim the bank account. Let's use a bank account, a mm-hmm. savings account. Great. Here you go, Ms. Heggie. Fill out the form. Upload on secure portals. Most all of these financial institutions have secure portals. Here's your form. Here's a death certificate. Here's my ID. Here's a certified copy of the will.
Okay.
The financial institution, their estate settlement department, goes through the paperwork, and they will say, we can't speak to you. You need a letter of office.
Okay. Get the letter of office. Where do you get that?
That's where you go, John. That's when you know that you have to go to see a probate judge.
And so this is, and we could go into the weeds deeper and deeper into this thing, but this is like one of those things where you say, what might be a better estate plan? Because a trust is handled way differently, right?
Well, exactly. This is where a trust can alleviate or obviate or prevent the where's the letter of office question or email coming back to an executor.
Mm-hmm. And a trust is a little bit more involved to set up, but can do a lot more for you, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, a trust is, you know, at its legal essence, John, a trust is a contract. Okay? Is it 5 pages? No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about 5 or 10 pages. But it's a contract that you make with yourself to allow you to own your property in a certain way while you're living. Critically, for people that are living longer, as a lot of us are, to have a plan in place to have your assets provide for you if you find yourself living with an incapacity, and then having a private and seamless transfer of assets when you're no longer living. So that's essentially what a trust is. It's a contract, but I want everyone to really think about a trust like a box.
Mm-hmm.
And I say box because a trust is a contract, you sign it. So once you've signed your trust, you've built your box. And you fill that box with your property.
Right.
You sign a deed to put your home into the trust. Now your home is in the box. You go to the bank and sign a form that says, I changed the way I own my savings account from Corinne individually to Corinne as trustee of the Corinne Trust. Now the savings account is sitting inside the box. And then if it's inside the box, a probate judge won't be involved in the distribution of that property.
Right. It doesn't go through probate. It's a whole separate process, which I think is why it piques a lot of people's interest. Okay, we could go for hours on this, Corinne. Just broadly speaking, is it just best to either you or you and John? I mean, can someone go? I guess what I'm asking is, can they call you and they have no idea about the answer to all of these questions, and you're at least going to help them guide themselves towards a place? Because I know the decision between a will and a trust is a difficult one for people to make. I imagine calling you is just a great first step.
It is a great first step, and, you know, feel free. May this be an invitation to listeners out there to go to our website and just, even if you're not ready to fill out the questionnaire, or even if this is, you know, on your list of things to do in 2023, just go through the questionnaire, and then you get an idea of kind of the information that we're, you know, that you need to gather so we can figure out how you own your property, what property you own, and who's going to get it when you no longer can enjoy it yourself, to kind of get in the mindset, and we'd love to have a conversation with you.
Absolutely. HeggieLaw.com is the website. 847-272-7360 is the phone number to reach out to Corinne. And I know we got a couple callers who just called in right at the end of the segment, unfortunately. That happens a lot, Corinne, and we'll make sure to pass on that number. 847-272-7360, HeggieLaw.com. Corinne, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
John, thanks for allowing me to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
I know it's like the least favorite thing for people to add to their resolutions, but it makes such a big difference. How many stories do we hear about celebrities that didn't have a will and they have these big estates and there's drama? There was the gentleman on the northwest side of the city who had $11 million in his estate. The state was able to figure out who it went to, but it went through lawyers' fees and it cost about $4 million to do that. So a plan ahead, folks at Heggie Walkner Law Firm, Corinne and John.